Welcome to a Juno Afternoon on Tuesday, April 11th, 2017. I'm your host, Scott Burton. On today's show, we'll learn about theater at Latitude 58's upcoming shows, The Orphan Train and Shakespeare's Cymbeline. We have a whole troupe of actors and producers out in the studio. People from Aware and the Glory Hole will tell us about this Saturday's Candlelight Vigil. Discovery Southeast will highlight their new store at the Mendenhall Glacier Visitor Center. And we'll learn more about kindergarten registration happening this week. Those interviews, National Native News, Writer's Almanac, Bird Note Music, and more right here, live and local on Juno Afternoon.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. The oral tradition of Southeast Alaska's Tlingit and Haida people says they've lived in the region since time immemorial. And as KSTK's Aaron Bolton reports, a new study published in the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences connects present-day Southeast Native groups to ancient remains.
A team of scientists has been studying DNA from Shukaka, 10,300-year-old skeletal remains, for about 10 years. Brian Kemp, Associate Professor of Anthropology at the University of Oklahoma, began the study using mitochondrial DNA.
Mitochondrial DNA is passed solely from mother to offspring, and then it can only be passed on from her daughter to her grandchildren.
The maternal line could only be traced to 6,000-year-old remains found near Prince Rupert, British Columbia. Partner Ripon Molly, Associate Professor of Anthropology at the University of Illinois, explains new technology has allowed the team to get a more robust DNA sample.
All of the DNA that was in the tooth, that where the DNA was extracted from, and that's going to include both human DNA, the nuclear DNA, as well as the mitochondrial, and a bunch of bacterial DNA.
The sample made the connection from the 6,000-year-old remains to 3,000 and 1,500-year-old remains, all found near Prince Rupert. And then the connection was made to modern-day descendants. Sea Alaska Heritage Institute commissioned the study. President Rosita Worrell is happy the findings reaffirm traditional history.
Because the scientific data shows that we've lived, or indigenous people have lived here in Southeast Alaska for at least 10,000 years, or as the Tlingit and Haida say, since time immemorial.
I'm Aaron Bolton.
The Nebraska Liquor Commission met last week to explore if four stores in the reservation border town of White Clay will have their liquor licenses renewed. As Jim Kent reports, a primary concern among residents is a lack of adequate law enforcement.
White Clay, Nebraska is considered the primary alcohol supplier for residents of South Dakota's Pine Ridge Reservation. Lakota tribal members not only buy alcohol there, but are frequently seen intoxicated on White Clay's streets. Nebraska State Senator Tom Brewer says the White Clay Liquor Store's licenses aren't being automatically renewed due to complaints about alcohol sales and allegations of bootlegging. But he says the Nebraska Liquor Commission's primary concern are reports of the almost non-existent presence of law enforcement in the town.
The Liquor Commission is looking at, is there adequate overwatch of what's happening there, and are there things being done to prevent everything from the public intoxication to all of the trafficking of alcohol, people, things that are going on that shouldn't be going on.
Sheriff Terry Robbins is responsible for policing Nebraska's Sheridan County, which includes White Clay. He was asked during the hearing about arrests made in White Clay's liquor stores.
You know how many of those kinds of arrests your department made in 2016?
Yeah.
Is the answer none?
Yeah.
And is the answer none for 2015?
I believe so.
And is it also none for 2014?
Yeah.
No further questions.
The Oglala Sioux Tribe's Attorney General advised the commission there's a limited relationship with Nebraska law enforcement and added that issues from alcohol sales in White Clay often transfer over to the reservation. A group of tribal members and their supporters would like to see the alcohol licenses canceled in order to close down the White Clay stores. Final arguments in the hearing will be presented April 14th. The Nebraska Liquor Commission will then offer a decision on renewing licenses for the White Clay liquor stores by May 2nd. I'm Jim Kent.
And I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kawanic Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation.
Support for this program is provided by the Native American Rights Fund, reminding you that sovereignty is not free. Native American Rights Fund has been helping Indian tribes for over 40 years with critical issues such as treaty enforcement, hunting and fishing rights, Indian child welfare, religious freedom, and more. You too can become a modern-day warrior with your support for NARF's work. Learn more at narf.org and join the fight for Native rights.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
And you're listening to a Juno Afternoon here on Tuesday, April 11th, 2017. Scott Burton, your host. Absolutely beautiful here in the capital city today. And joining me in the studio in K2, I have maybe one of the biggest groups I've ever had on the Juno Afternoon before. We have directors, artistic directors, and actors from theater at Latitude 58's upcoming productions of The Orphan Train and Cymbeline. Welcome, everybody.
Hello.
Hello.
So I think it makes sense to start with The Orphan Train because it opens this weekend at McPheeters Hall. It opens on Friday. Is that right, Cinnamon?
It does. Friday, 7 p.m.
Okay. Before we hear from the actors, you are the artistic director of Theater at Latitude 58 and the director of the play, right?
I am.
How did you find this one and who wrote it?
So I found this watching a PBS special, and the author of this
Go PBS.
Yeah. And the author of this is Orin Harris, and Orin actually interviewed many of the writers of The Orphan Train, and so many of the stories that are in our play are actually based on historical events that actually happened.
And if people don't know what The Orphan Train was, will you remind us?
Oh, absolutely. That is actually the birth of our foster care system. Back in 1880 to 1920, 250,000 children were sent from the streets of New York City out west to clean air and families that were willing to take them in.
Okay. And with you are actors Ava Piper-Taylor and Nara, for this production anyway. Why don't we start with you, Nara? Tell us what your story is in this play. Who do you play?
I'm Nara, and I play two different women. One is kind of a dramatic lady, and she really wants a girl, but her husband adopted a boy, and then later they figure out that the boy is actually a girl, because he wanted to, like, intimidate people. And then the other lady is a very snarky person, and she really wants this girl to play with her daughter.
Okay. How about you, Taylor?
Hi, I'm Taylor, and I play Evie, who was an orphan on the train, and she was originally in a gang before being sent to the orphan train.
All right, and next, Piper.
Hi. I play Harvey Smith. He's a bully, and he bullies this little Irish girl, and he's really mean to her until the end.
You're mean in this play? You don't look very mean. Ava.
Hi, I'm Ava. I play another mean boy that I'm kind of on with her. And I also dare Harvey to write something on the Irish girl's desk.
What's the setting of the play? Are you on the train itself? Have you landed somewhere? Someone want to tell me about that?
Okay, so it starts off in almost every scene where you see the orphans on the train, and then you see them get adopted, and you see their home and how it goes.
Okay. Well, this sounds really interesting. Let's get back to that in a minute, but let's also talk about Cymbeline, which opens the next weekend on the 20th and the 23rd. Is that right, Karen?
That's correct. We open on the 20th, and our first show is a benefit performance to help keep the lights on at McPheeters Hall. And the ticket prices are a little higher for that one, but there will be dessert with your show.
All right. And Karen, you're the director of the show, right?
Mm-hmm.
How did you choose this production?
Well, I've made a lot of my life working on Shakespeare, and Cymbeline is Shakespeare's least produced play.
Nobody ever does it, as far as I can tell, other than Theater in the Rough reading it during Bardathons. Nobody has ever staged it here, so I thought it would be fun.
Okay. Is it fun, Maggie?
Yes, it's very fun.
And who do you play?
I play the Evil Queen.
She doesn't have a name.
It's fun. She doesn't have a name, but they describe her as enjoying boiling puppies at one point.
Oh, my goodness.
She's very fun.
Did you even say that? Wow. And Kai, who do you play?
I play a very snarky, sarcastic, mostly speaking in aside straight to the audience, Lord. It's very fun.
And give us the basic story.
Basic story of Cymbeline is it is set in pre-Christian Britain in both London and the Welsh town of Milford Haven. Romantic name, right? And the king's daughter, King Cymbeline's daughter Imogen, has secretly and without her father's permission married posthumous Leonidas, who is exiled. And he ends up making a bet with someone, Iachimo, that he can seduce Imogen, except he can't, but he cheats and tells Posthumus he can. We have Bandis in the woods, a cross-dressing heroine, a severed head, sword fight, ghosts, songs. It's like all of Shakespeare thrown in a blender.
Wow.
All in one play.
What's been the most enjoyable part of it for you two?
Carting around a fake head all over town, that's been great. And making fun of the guy who plays the queen's son, that's great.
Being evil. I've never been evil in a show before, and it's really fun to let my snarky side out.
Wow, this sounds like a lot of fun. Going back, let's go to the Orphan Train, which, again, opens this weekend. What's been the best part of it for you, Nara?
Theater at Lattice 58 is kind of like a family to me, and it's just nice being with people that you enjoy being around.
Yeah, I've heard that before about your theater.
I think my favorite part is that I started out when I was really little, and now I'm kind of the oldest in our group, so I get to hang out with all the little kids. It's really fun.
Sort of mentor them. Very cool.
I like that you don't have to... Like, that you can just be yourself, because it's kind of like your family, so you can just...
All right. How about you, Ava?
I really like doing it because I'm with all my friends, and I can be myself, and it's really fun because I remember starting out, like, super-duper shy. I didn't even want to be any part. but now I, like, really like being all the big singing roles and stuff.
About how many of you are in the Orphan Train? How many?
We have a cast of 23, and that's we've got moms, we've got I don't think we have any dads in this one. In the last one, we had a grandma, a mom, and so three generations. So we've got all the ages.
And can you give us the details again, Cinnamon, on where to get tickets, times, all that stuff?
I can. So tickets are from any cast member or at the door. And again, Friday, 7 p.m., Saturday, 2 p.m., and Saturday evening, 7 p.m.
And what Facebook, your website, where can people
get more info?
Facebook,
find us Theater at Latitude 58, and our website, theateratlatitude58.com.
All right, and Karen, will you give us the details on yours?
Mm-hmm. Cymbeline opens Thursday the 20th at 7 p.m., and then there is a Friday show at 7. There's a matinee on Saturday at 2, an evening show at 7, and we close on the Sunday matinee at 2. And tickets are available at Hearthside Books, at Vendini, at the Jack, and at the door.
Okay. Am I missing anything? Anything or any lines that anybody wants to share? Any songs? Anything? Oh, we have a ukulele.
Maggie arranged the music for it, so she can give you some of one of the songs that is sung by the two brothers when they find Imogen dead, except not really.
I can try. Let's see.
Fear no more the heat of the sun, or the furious winter's rages. Now thy worldly task is done. Thou art gone and take thy wages. Golden girls and girls are must, as chimney sweepers come to dust. Fear no more the frown of the great. Thou art past the tyrant's stroke. Thou art their words.
The reed.
yoke. Food and lamps and girls on bus, as chimney sweepers counted dust. Hear no more lightning flash, nor the whole dreaded thunderstone. Fear not slander, censure rash. Thou hast finished joy and moan. All lovers young, lovers must, none signed to thee and counted dust. No exerciser harm thee, nor no witchcraft charm thee. Ghosts unlaid forbear thee, quiet consummation have, and renowned be thy grave.
All right. Maggie, you composed that?
Arranged.
Arranged. All right. May I ask what grade you're in?
I'm a 12th grader.
All right. Very cool. Check out Orphan Train and Cymbeline. Orphan Train's this weekend. Cymbeline's next weekend at McPheeters Hall. Thank you all so much for
coming on
the show
today. Thank you for having us.
Anytime.
Once I had a darling mother, though I can't recall her name. I had a baby brother who I'll never see again. For the children's home is sending us out on the orphan train to try to find someone to take us in.
Take us in, we have rode the orphan train. Take us in, we need a home, we need a name. Take us in. Oh, won't you be our kin? We are looking for someone to take us in.
I have stolen from the poor box. I've begged the city streets. I've swamped the bars and pool rooms for a little bite to eat. In my daddy's ivory jacket and these rags upon my feet, I've been looking for someone to take me in.
Take us in. We have rode the orphan train. Take us in, we need a home, we need a name. Take us in. Oh, won't you be our kin? We are looking for someone to take us in.
Children's home, they gathered us, me and all the rest. They taught us to sit quietly until the food was blessed. Then they put us on the orphan train and sent us way out west to try to find someone to take us in. The farmers and their families, they came from miles around. We lined up on the platform of the station in each town. And one by one we parted like some living lost and found. And one by one we all were taken in.
Take us in. We have rode the orphan train. Take us in. We need a home. We need a name. Take us in. Oh, won't you be our kin? We are looking for someone to take us in.
Now there's many a fine doctor or a teacher in your school. There's many a good preacher who can teach the golden rule. Who started out in orphans, sleeping in the freezing rain. Whose life began out on the orphan train.
Take us in, we have rode the orphan train. Take us in, we need a home, we need a name. Take us in, oh. Our kin, we are looking for someone to take us in. Take us in. We have rode the orphan train. Take us. us in. We need a home, we need a name. Take us in. Oh, won't you be our kin? We are looking for someone to take us in.
Support comes from Rooney's Roost Bed and Breakfast, located in downtown Wrangell. Rooney's Roost includes a full breakfast with your room, each with a private bath and TV. More information at 907-874-2026 or rooneysroost.com.
You're listening to a Juno Afternoon here on Tuesday, April 11th, 2017. Scott Burton, your host. It's about 20 minutes after the hour. And in the studio now is Christina Love from AWARE. She's the Community Resources Coordinator, and also Mandy Cole, who's the Deputy Director at AWARE. And we're going to be talking about this Saturday night's Take Back the Night. Welcome to the show, Christina and Mandy.
Thanks, Scott.
Thank you. It's nice to have you here. Mandy, should we start with you? What inspired this? It's going to be a march / candlelight vigil.
Yeah, you know, in true Juno fashion, it's going to be whatever we make it at the time. But Take Back the Night as a thing has been kind of around since the 70s. You know, one of our friends, Rachel Brown, was telling us how she went with her mom and dad when she was like 5 years old, and they were playing the guitar and making flower wreaths. So Take Back the Night has like a rich tradition of kind of making a statement that there are survivors of sexual assault in our community, and we don't normally think about them. You know, that there's this whole other world out there that when you are, you know, God forbid, the victim of sexual violence, then you feel like everything is changed. And so part of what we do in Sexual Assault Awareness Month, which is April, is say, you know, you're still part of our community. We see you. We can support you. You don't have to be afraid to have these experiences, and you don't have to feel alone.
Okay. And I think before the show, Christina, you were saying that maybe people who are homeless are more vulnerable.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there are a lot of reasons that that people come into shelter, and there are a lot of different reasons why people end up homeless. And what we're seeing is that a lot of people have co-occurring disorders. We're looking at multiple layers of trauma, and because of that, and because of being homeless, then they're less likely to report abuse, or they have a different type of relationship with our local police department than, say, you or I do today. And we know that historically people that have disabilities or are vulnerable are more likely to be physically or sexually abused.
Okay. And Mandy, the Glory Hole is also a part of this. Is that right?
That's right. The Glory Hole has, you know, one of the most recognizable and longest held traditions of helping people who are on the street and people who are experiencing homelessness. And AWARE and the Glory Hole work like hand in glove as emergency shelters to try and get people safe. I mean, that's the bottom line. That's what shelter's about, is trying to help people feel more safe regardless of what else is going on in their lives. And so our kind of particular niche is domestic violence and sexual assault, but we overlap all of the time in so many ways that the Glory Hole is a natural fit as a partner for this. And we want to make sure that, you know, not only are we recognizing kind of victims of sexual violence that happened here in Juneau, but that they also know where they can go, and that there's no wrong door. So if you walk into the Glory Hole and you have a story to tell, then the Glory Hole will help you. And the help they get may be taking you to AWARE, which happens actually quite frequently, but that we are all kind of connected in that way. And so there's no like, we don't do that, or, you know, go here for this. We actually work together super closely so that people are kind of walked through the process with real intention and connection, because that's the only way you can help someone who's had a lot of trauma in their life. You can't say, here's the name of a person, and hand them a slip of paper and think that they're going to go show up at that person's office. And so our work takes a lot of effort and a lot of connection and a lot of love.
And Saturday night, what's the significance of that?
Well, Saturday night is the start of the camping ordinance. And we, you know, I was in the assembly chambers, and I heard a lot of people talk about how unsafe they feel on the street. And I thought that took a lot of courage. And You know, I wanted to find another way. You know, there were several assembly members who really recognized how brave that was to stand up there and say, you know, I sleep in the doorway because I'm afraid to go any further out. It's darker, there are less people. And a lot of those people had visible injuries. And so partly we wanted to say, you know, we heard you say that and we're here. And we can continue to support you as we struggle to kind of find a solution.
Hey, tell us about the details of Saturday, timing, and where to meet, things like that.
Well, we're going to meet up at 8:30 at Courthouse Plaza, which is apparently the name of that little spot in front of Diamond Courthouse where the bear is. so we're going to meet there. And it's going to be dark because it's 8:30, which is when Take Back the Nights happen. We're going to bring some candles, but feel free to bring your own candle or any kind of illumination you feel safe with. I think some people don't like to walk with candles. And in Juneau, sometimes it's wet, so I totally get it. We're going to meet up at 8:30. We're going to talk a little bit up there, kind of together. And then we're going to give a flower to everyone who's attending. And that flower is yours to decide what to do with. I know some people are going to place it in places where they've seen people sleeping downtown. Some people are going to place it in places where they themselves have been victimized downtown. So it's kind of up to you, but again, with the theme of making the unseen seen, we're going to give people a way to mark a place so that we can kind of start looking a little deeper. And then as we reconvene, we're going to reconvene down at the Glory Hole, and we're going to have cocoa, and we're going to listen to Dr. Ernestine Hayes. She's got a few words for us. And then we're just going to spend some time in community.
And you want people to bring a candle as well, right?
They can absolutely bring a candle, but we'll have some extras, of course. And we're also asking people to bring camping gear so that we can donate it to people who need it who are sleeping on the street.
Okay. Christina, what do you hope is the takeaway from this? When people see this happening or hear about it right now, what do you hope that they think about or learn?
That's good. I would say a lot of our work is really giving a population a voice that maybe hasn't been heard before. And like Mandy said, really giving this this demographic, this whole population that really hasn't been seen or heard, you know, the opportunity to be seen and heard. And, you know, and I think that in a lot of different ways over the last 6 months, then different issues have come to light, you know, that's forced the city or the population, the community of Juneau to really look at some of these issues. And this is just another way. And I love the visual of us spreading out through downtown, really taking ground and really, you know, taking back the night. And knowing that, I really, really hope that the people that are suffering, you know, that are struggling, that are on the street or have been victims of domestic violence and sexual assault, know that there are people in the community that really care. I really want the message to be that, you know, that we see you, that we hear you, that we support you, even if it doesn't feel like that in other areas.
How about you, Mandy?
Well, I was just going to say that sometimes when there are awareness events like this, you know, you don't want people to think like, okay, Juneau's dangerous and you don't know how dangerous it is. This isn't about feeling like more in danger or more scared. It's more about every one of us being able to hold a piece of this so that it doesn't fall to just a few people who've experienced some kind of victimization to then say what it's like. If we can all kind of be participatory, if we can all kind of see what's happening and make it real, then it doesn't fall to the people who are most harmed to have to explain that harm to everyone. And so it really does a wonderful thing if we can all hold a piece of it so we don't have to put the burden on the people least able to hold it right now.
Okay. Again, 8:30 Saturday at the Bear near the courthouse, right?
Mm-hmm.
Bring camping gear to donate. And will people leave it there, or what's the plan with that?
We'll have a van there. You can also drop it off at the Glory Hole in advance if you want. You know, for some people, they might just want to hold it and pack it around. Some people might want to give it to us at the Bear, and some people might want to drop it off at the Glory Hole. Any way that you bring it is good by us, we promise. Take good care of it.
8:30, camping gear if you have it, candle if you have it. You'll be given a flower. Are we missing anything?
Well, you can check us out on Facebook. It's on Aware's Facebook. You're also very welcome to give us a call at 586-6623 if you need some more information. This is, you know, we're going to talk a bit about sexual violence, but in a pretty, like, approachable way. So people can bring their children. I'm bringing my kids. You know, I know that there are lots of people who are coming out. We're not going to do anything that's too difficult for kids to hear. So feel free to bring your family and, you know, your loved ones out to just support these folks in our community.
Christina, anything else you want to add?
No, it's beautiful. Thank you so much for having us.
All right, thanks for coming on the show. Christina Love, Mandy Cole, they're with Aware, and they'll be waiting for you by the bear at the Diamond Courthouse at 8:30 on Saturday night. More information at Aware's Facebook page.
That's right.
Great. Thanks, you too.
Thank you.
Planned Parenthood, working to provide personalized and compassionate care. From annual exams to birth control options, STD testing to cancer screenings, Planned Parenthood provides reproductive health care with or without insurance. Located next to Twin Lakes at the corner of Egan and Glacier. Appointments online at PlannedParenthood.org.
You're listening to a Juno Afternoon. Scott Burton, your host. We're right at the bottom of the hour. My guest now is Sean Isley. He is the Executive Director of Discovery Southeast. And we're going to talk about a new bookstore at the Mendenhall Glacier Visitor Center, auction, teacher expeditions, summer camps, and basically getting kids outside. Welcome to the show, Sean.
Thanks so much for having me, Scott.
Wow, you are busy.
We have not had a busier time than I remember for Discovery Southeast. We've got tons of stuff going on, and it's all great.
If somebody doesn't know, what's the elevator pitch for Discovery Southeast?
Education, exploration, deepening our connection with nature. So Discovery Southeast was started about 30 years ago in Juneau and provides hands-on nature education for kids, giving that formative experience, getting outdoors, creating those natural experiences that all of us had as kids that are really good for our physical fitness, our mental wellness, and our intellectual curiosity.
So would you say your flagship program is Nature Studies 3, 4, 5? That's what I used to do with you guys,
yeah.
Taking 3rd, 4th, and 5th graders right out of their school, right into the nature spaces around them.
Yeah, beautiful thing about Nature Studies is it's in all of the schools, and so it reaches every Juneau child, giving them that same formative experience. So all 3rd, 4th, and 5th grade classrooms, we go into every school, every season of the school year, and do an introduction that works with the science curriculum that's already going on in the classroom. And then we take kids outdoors on a subsequent day for a half-day field trip, and then we go back for a classroom wrap-up the day after.
I remember when I used to teach with you guys, I would have kids come up to me and say, I've never been in the woods before.
Anecdotally, we were finding that about half of the kids in classes, just when we do informal surveys, say they haven't really been exploring outdoors with an adult before, which is astounding. We kind of take it for granted because we live in a place like this. And I think we also just take for granted how important that is to all of our to our psyche, to our growth as humans, to have those connections at a young age.
Right. And what's your favorite piece of research to point to about the importance of getting kids outside? I think we all know it, but what do you like to report?
You know, it's actually just personal empirical evidence. As you go out and you take time and you go for a walk or you do something where all of a sudden you don't have your cell phone beeping at you and other stuff going on, and you can just be really present outdoors. Maybe that's for a walk. Maybe it's for a week-long or two-week-long trip. And you come back, and you just feel you feel present, you feel like a whole person. I think that's the strongest experience we all have.
Okay, so beyond these programs at all the schools, 3, 4th, and 5th graders, a new bookstore out at the Glacier Visitor Center?
We are so excited to open a bookstore at the Mendenhall Glacier. It's going to be a great resource for the community. I think we're going to have a lot of community programs out there. We've got tons of community artists and authors who are part of this project. 75% of the products that we sell are locally sourced. So it's maybe an author in Juneau or
an
artist in Juneau.
Who are a few names we might recognize?
Let's see. Nell McConaughey has her work there, her jewelry. Mark Kelly has all of his books and photography. There are so many others.
Richard Carstensen.
Of course, Discovery Southeast and Richard Carstensen are going to be there. Let's see, Ed and Kathy Hansen are there with, like, we're going to have those the Alaska wooden toys
that they make
there.
Yep. By hand.
Exactly.
Very cool. That sounds excellent. And so what are the hours right now at the center? And when does your bookstore open?
Bookstore opens May 1st. And so I think the visitor center out the Glacier is closed right now, but I think it opens up on May 1st. So we'll be out there. I want to say it's like 7:30 to 7:30 every day.
And that is a very important weekend for you as well because of the auction.
Yeah, we've got a lot going on. Saturday, April 29th is the Discovery Southeast Banquet and Auction, our annual one. I think it's our 28th annual. It's going to be at Centennial Hall. You can support either the bookstore project or get tickets for our banquet and auction at discoverysoutheast.org. Right on our homepage, there's a Discovery News section, and I think the first two news items are the auction and the bookstore.
Is that Friday or Saturday night?
It's Saturday, I believe, April 29th.
Got it. Very enjoyable evening, nice meal, dinner provided.
It's a great time, catered by V's, and good food, great community. We have tons of great auction items, as always. We'll have some extra fun stuff that we've got going on for the bookstore. We've got some new T-shirts, some new mugs, and a couple new koozies and fun stuff.
All right. Kids will still be in school then, but it won't be long before they get out. And then there's Discovery Summer Camps, which I understand are filling up really fast.
Yeah, Outdoor Explorer Summer Camps. The model is to make sure that kids are outdoors all day long, every day, and we're just going through different places in Juneau and going hiking and going exploring. Think about how much structured time kids have and how busy their lives are. And with this program, it really creates a lot of unstructured time. There's a lot of project-based learning, just time to be fun and explore outdoors with a kid. We have pretty small group size, a really great staff. One of the best things is we have complete sliding scale tuition. So it's affordable to every family. Families can just name the price that they want to pay.
And those start in late May or early June?
So in early June, we have 8 weeks of double sessions of camp. And then this year, something really exciting, brand new, is we're going to have 2 weeks that are kayak expeditions for young teens, so for middle schoolers. And those are the same things. There's full sliding scale tuition, so it's totally available to any family that wants to send their kid on this trip. And it's going to be an awesome experience.
Have we talked teacher expeditions yet?
That's the other thing we have going on this summer. So one way, obviously, to get kids outdoors is to run great programs like Nature Studies or Outdoor Explorers. And the other way is to work with teachers and make sure that all of Juno's teachers have kind of the toolbox and the experiences to work with their classrooms outdoors every single day. And so we have we actually have three teacher expeditions this year. We had one that just wrapped up in April that was local, and so it was just doing it on Saturdays for teachers who wanted to come out. We have our flagship Pack Creek teacher expedition happening in early June, and that's where teachers paddle down to Pack Creek for a week. There's a lot of bear viewing and just great studying of natural history on Admiralty Island.
And this works towards teachers continuing ed,
right? Yeah, they get professional development credits from the University of Alaska.
Okay. Wow, you are busy.
And we also have a teacher expedition in late June out at the Eagle Valley Center. And so, again, that's kind of the local idea is how can we give teachers experiences outdoors that are really easy for them to take their classrooms to. And so by doing a 3-day, 2-night course out at the Eagle Valley Center, it's really an introduction into an area that every teacher can go and take their child to in the future.
Wow.
A lot going on, and I'll be honest, it's a big lift. We're doing a lot of stuff, and so we're asking for people's support for that. For the bookstore, we've gotten a lot of private donations and even a Rasmussen grant, which we're really excited about, but we've started a Kickstarter campaign to raise the last final pieces of the startup costs because we got to get the cash registers out there and get all those things that just need to happen in order to start up sales May 1st. So we have a Kickstarter campaign for that with some great rewards, so it is a if you put in a $25 or a $45 contribution into the Kickstarter campaign, the rewards that you get are going to be well worth it. They're awesome. It just provides an injection of cash up front for us to do that startup. And you'll always know that when you go out to the visitor center, you were there to make it happen. You're part of it. So best way to do that is at discoverysoutheast.org. The specific website is Glacier Bookstore, but you can just go to discoverysoutheast.org. And then while you're there, buy your auction ticket for our banquet and auction this year.
Sean, is there something you can share with our listeners? You're obviously very passionate about Discovery Southeast. You're doing great things. Maybe a story you've heard, an experience a kid had, or a teacher, or a parent, something that you've heard that keeps you so passionate about this.
Hmm. You know, one of my favorite, I mean, you know, summer camp. You spend time in the field, and, like, it's just so fun to be outdoors and see the kids exploring there. I was remembering one day in the field last summer, we were with the kids tide pooling out at Outer Point, and we just had a great morning, and they were just kind of dispersed on the beach. They were looking at different things in the tide pools, and we did an activity afterwards where I think they were writing some poetry, and then we had a quiet time where everyone just kind of got out onto their own little rock outcropping and just, you know, time to observe. And it's funny because, like, if you talk to a parent or you talk to most folks, and they're like, yeah, I think, like, that kid will be quiet for, like, 30 seconds, maybe a minute if you're lucky. And we actually stopped that quiet activity after half an hour just because, like, it was time to move on. But just that sense of peacefulness in children is just wonderful, and that's really important that we make sure kids in our community have that.
Remind us the website where we can go to find all these dates and make contributions.
DiscoverySoutheast.org.
All right, Sean Isley, he's the ED of Discovery Southeast Outdoor Education for Kids. Anything else you want to add, Sean?
Thanks a lot. Two ways to support us right now, banquet and auction and the Kickstarter campaign. We really appreciate it.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Tuesday. It's the 11th of April, 2017. It's the birthday of the columnist Ellen Goodman, born in Newton, Massachusetts, 1941, started writing her syndicated column for the Boston Globe in 1974, which she finally retired from New Year's Day 2010. She wrote in that last column, "I began writing my column when my daughter was 7, and I leave as my grandson turns 7. I began writing about Gerald Ford and end writing about Barack Obama. I began on a typewriter, transmitting columns on a Xerox telecopier, Now I have a MacBook on my desk and an iPhone in my pocket. It has been a great gift to make a living trying to make sense out of the world around me. That is as much a disposition as an occupation. It was on this date, 1881, Spelman College was founded in the basement of Friendship Baptist Church in Atlanta, originally known as the Atlanta Baptist Female Seminary. It's the oldest private liberal arts college for black women in the United States. It was on this day in 1945 the U.S. Army liberated the Buchenwald concentration camp near Weimar, Germany, a camp in which about 56,000 prisoners had died. It was the first to be liberated at the end of World War II. As the American Army closed in on Buchenwald, the Gestapo telephoned the camp administration to announce that it was going to blow up the camp and destroy any evidence of its existence. The camp administration, however, had already fled in fear of the Allies, and it was a prisoner who answered the phone, pretending to be a camp official. He persuaded headquarters that explosives would not be needed because the camp had already been destroyed. Among those who were there, who were saved by the Americans, was Elie Wiesel, who went on to win the Nobel Peace Prize in 1986. And it's the birthday of the poet Mark Strand, born on Prince Edward Island, Canada, 1934. Though he grew up in South and Central America, his father was working for Pepsi-Cola, moved the family around Cuba to Peru to Mexico. He wanted to be a painter. He enrolled in the Yale School of Art, but then he started reading poetry, mostly Wallace Stevens, which led him to decide to become a poet. Worked as a waiter, delivered laundry to pay his way through Yale. Mark Strand, who died in 2014, and in his last years he put away poetry and he took up painting again. Here's a poem by Mark Strand on his birthday, Harmony in the Boudoir. After years of marriage, he stands at the foot of the bed and tells his wife that she will never know him, that for everything he says, there is more that he does not say, that behind each word he utters, there is another word and hundreds more behind that one. All those unsaid words, he says, contain his true self, which has been betrayed by the superficial self before her. So you see, he says, kicking off his slippers, I am more than what I have led you to believe I am. Oh, you silly man, says his wife, of course you are. I find that just thinking of you having so many selves receding into nothingness is very exciting. That you barely exist as you are couldn't please me more. Harmony in the Boudoir, poem by Mark Strand from Almost Invisible, published by Alfred A. Knopf and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac. Supported by Progressive Insurance, committed to offering a streamlined shopping experience where home and auto can be bundled together. Now that's Progressive. Learn more at progressive.com or 1-800-PROGRESSIVE. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
This is Bird Note. Each spring, millions of birds depart tropical Central and South America for the temperate climate of North America. The same phenomenon occurs simultaneously all across Europe and Asia as vast numbers of birds head north from Africa, Australia, and southern Asia. From as far south as Ecuador, beautiful scarlet tanagers fly north to nest in the eastern U.S. and Canada, many traversing the Gulf of Mexico on their way, an arduous journey. Across much of southern Europe, common nightingales, small thrushes with russet feathers, are arriving.
These legendary singers have traveled northward from tropical Africa across immense deserts. In northern Asia, petite songbirds known as Siberian ruby throats are arriving en masse, some winging their way across the South China Sea from the Philippines, others over the mountains from Thailand. These three examples, a tiny sample from among thousands of migratory species, only hint at the overall grandeur of worldwide avian migration, one of the most fundamental processes in all of nature. Get a good look at these three birds, and all we feature on BirdNote, when you come to our website, birdnote.org. I'm Mary McCann.
You're listening to a Juno Afternoon here on Tuesday, April 10th. It's about 10 minutes till the top of the hour, and I have a crew from Glacier Valley Elementary School, Principal Lucy Potter, Dana White, and Carly Lanehart. They're both kindergarten teachers, and we're here to talk about kindergarten registration, which it's that time of the year, isn't it? Welcome to the show, you three.
Thank you.
Yeah, it's nice to have you here. Lucy, you want to tell us a little bit about Thursday and what parents of kindergartners should be thinking about?
Sure. So we have kinder registration across the district, 1:30 to 5 on Thursday, and we encourage you to go to the school that's in your boundary, your home school, to register. You'll need your birth certificate, your immunization papers, and most schools ask for proof of residency so they can help to make sure that you're at the right school to register.
Okay, so for example, at your school this Thursday from 1:30 to 5, people should come in, and kindergartners start at age 5, right?
Mm-hmm. by September 1st.
Okay, and what are some things that they'll be able to see when they get to the school?
At our school, they'll walk into the library, and there will be packets that they can fill out with just simple information about their child. And the kindergarten teachers will be in and out, so ready to answer questions. The office staff will be there to answer questions. And I'm not sure how it works in other schools, but I'm sure it's pretty much similar to that.
Okay. And is this a kid-friendly event? Should people be bringing their kids?
I would say yes. Definitely bring your child to the school. It's a good first step for getting him or her accustomed to coming to the school and having a chance to see where they'll be going next year, which can help ease some of those first-year jitters.
Thinking about that, Dana and Carly, what are some things parents should be thinking about as they get their kindergartners ready for fall?
Lots of socialization. That's one of the big things. Getting kids comfortable being away from you as the parent. That's one thing that can cause some hiccups in the first week or 2 weeks of school. Being able to write their name is something that helps. Some letters, recognition, and
going back to that first example of socialization, what's like an example of that that you would recommend?
Well, in kindergarten, they're with a lot of kids their own age, and there's a lot of tight quarters sitting on rugs and recess, and kids that have had a lot of socialization, so a lot of experiences with other kids, hanging out with other kids, playing with other kids, things go a lot smoother in terms of making friends and just being comfortable in a big group of kids. So more exposure to that, the better, is helpful for kids in their first week.
How about you, Dana? What would you recommend?
I would definitely recommend some practice with separation from mom or dad or whomever they live with. As Carly mentioned, the first couple weeks can be hard. There can be a little bit of crying or sadness just being away from mom or dad or, you know, their family member. So if you can practice just some small trips away with leaving your child with a friend or another family member and just reminding your child that, you know, this school is a safe place, I'll be back to get you at the end of the day, and just kind of getting familiar with those end-of-day routines and goodbyes, and you know, that person always comes back.
Anything you'd add to that, Lucy?
Excuse me. No, I think that both Dana and Carly, socialization is a really important thing. We do like them to be able to know some of their numbers, and they're recognizing their letters and their name and working on zipping their coat and tying their shoes and that sort of thing. So,
what's it like for the three of you? You see these little kiddos come in at age 5, and then after 5th grade, they're out. That's a lot of change. What's that like, seeing that?
It's a lot of change from the beginning of kindergarten to the end of kindergarten.
Very true.
Yes.
It's fun to watch kids grow up and things, watching them academically succeed and seeing them get excited over the years. But I think my favorite thing is just the social piece, just watching them socially grow and emotionally grow.
And if I'd like to add, I think an important part for me is really helping children to experience learning in a fun way and bringing into the classroom some really neat things about Juno and, you know, the space that we live in. And so helping kids in those first experiences with school, seeing that it can be fun and learning is, you know, an awesome thing that you can do your whole life. And whether you're inside the classroom or out in the world, you know, it's our job as teachers to really help them along that way. And so in Southeast Alaska, it's a great place to do that.
Sure. Lucy, can you give us the details again on this district-wide open house, right?
Correct. District-wide, all elementary schools will have their kinder registration 1:30 to 5 on Thursday. And you want to bring your birth certificate or the child's birth certificate, immunization papers, and proof of residency for that school. And the other thing that I wanted to mention is that if you want to, you can fill out the paperwork ahead of time and just drop it by the school during that registration time. So the district website and also the school websites most likely have, I know Glacier Valley's website has the registration paperwork on that website. And it's quite a bit of paperwork, so filling out ahead of time is actually kind of nice and convenient for those families sending kinders to school next year.
Okay. Is there anything else that any of you would like to add?
I don't think so.
Get out there and get to registration. It's really helpful for the schools to know who's registered and how many kinders we're going to have next year. So this early registration is really important. So come on out.
All right. Thank you all for coming on the show.
Thank you.
See you Thursday.
If you'd like to keep up with the variety of activities, people, and events in the capital city, you want to tune into a Juno Afternoon. Find out about concerts, meetings, events, classes, and speakers that add vitality to our community. Get to know your fellow residents. Plan your schedule. Learn what's going on and how you can be involved. Or be a part of the program by being a guest and passing the word about what you're up to. A Juno Afternoon, weekdays live at 3 on KTUO News, repeated at 4 on KRNN, and available on demand via KTUO.org.
Thanks for tuning in to a Juno Afternoon. Tomorrow on the show, we'll get an update on the Goldtown Theater with Colette Costa. We'll learn about Saturday's UAS Easter Egg Hunt, and we'll get a preview of the Alaska Design Forum. And we'll talk about the end of the ice skating season with Lauren Anderson. Taking a look at the weather, it's currently 52 degrees at the Juneau International Airport. And the forecast for tonight calls for mostly clear skies with a low around 33. And tomorrow's forecast calls for sunny skies with a high near 57. And Thursday, sunny with a high near 52. Thanks for tuning in to a Juno Afternoon.